and playing travelling salesman to a demented bitch who thought it ever so jolly to throw visitors to the lions, and not a thing to be done about it except feign eagerness with a churning stomach and a grin of glad hurrah, as I sat sweating in that stifling tent, with Napier regarding me like a prize pupil, and the benighted buffoon Speedy clapping me on the shoulder. Once again, I was hoist with my undeserved reputation for derring do, my fraudulent record of desperate service, and once again I couldn't refuse, not and keep my good name. Time was I'd have wriggled and lied and gone to any length to escape from the coils of duty, but experience had taught me to recognise a hopeless case, and this was a beauty, for Napier was right. On the face of it, I was the only man. And I was too great a poltroon to face the disgrace and disgust and social and professional ruin if I shirked and slunk home. Nope, I hadn't the game for that. So I did my damnedest to look like a greyhound in the slips, stiffening the sinews and imitating tigers, and dammy if Napier wasn't regarding me with decidedly wry amusement. "I see that I was right in supposing the mission to be won after your own heart. I wonder," he sounded almost jocular, "if it is perhaps rendered doubly attractive by the fact that it concerns a royal lady of striking personality? You may not be aware, Speedy, but Sir Harry has great experience in that line. When he was employed as envoy extraordinary to the court of the Maharani of the Punjab, he so far succeeded that Her Majesty proposed marriage, or so Sir Henry Lawrence assured me. And I recall that on the Peking expedition the army was consumed with jealousy of the favour shown to him by the Empress of China." He made a curious noise, which I could only interpret as a roguish chuckle. "Really, my dear Sir Harry, you should consider giving a course of lectures at Sandhurst or Addiscombe on the subject of courtly address." My, wasn't this free and easy chat, though? Could he be hinting at the unspoken thought which had certainly been in the pious minds of Broadfoot and Elgin, that I'd best secure royal cooperation by galloping her into what a Frenchman of my acquaintance called a condition of swoon? Surely not. They'd been worldly, wily politicians, but this was a grave, straight-laced senior of the old school who'd never dream. And then I remembered that this same Napier, with his antique whiskers and one foot in the grave, had recently married a spanking little filly of 18, which had plainly influenced his outlook on commerce with the fair sex. No wonder he looked as though he'd been fed through the mangle. Yes, I knew what he was thinking, the randy old rake. Well, I was in no mood to appreciate his lewd levity, if that's what it was. I said the reports of my diplomatic success had been greatly exaggerated, and that the army had a deuce of an imagination. "But seriously, sir, are you sure I'm the best man for this?" Bursting with eagerness to go, you see, but voicing honest doubt. "I mean, it's too big a thing to risk failure. I can see that, and while I'd do my level best, well, it wouldn't do," I burst out, "if I let you down through ignorance or inexperience of the country." "My dear Sir Harry," says he, so moved by my manly modesty that he put a hand on my shoulder, "I know of no man less likely to fail, and none in whom I repose such trust. And that, with him looking noble and Speedy muttering, 'Hear, hear,' was my fate signed, sealed, and shoved down the drain, and I could only await my marching orders, looking resolute and wondering how I might still slide out, God only knew how, along the way to the lair of this royal Medusa. Napier lost no time, calling in Moore to make notes and taking me flat aback by saying I must set out that same night. 'It is essential you be beyond the possibility of detection before dawn. You need not go far. The guide who is to escort you to Queen Mastiat lives only a few miles hence, and will afford you a roof to rest and prepare for your journey. And to let your beard start to grow,' he added, 'so that Kazim Tamwar may present a rather less European appearance.'"
"That's my nom de guerre, is it? Who am I?"
an Indian subject of the Nizam of Hyderabad, whom you served as a diplomat in Syria and Arabia, now travelling to Gala to buy their famous horses for the Nizam's cavalry. The Galas